Blog Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome once again to the FootballDiehards.com podcast. My name is Skip Lacombe. Lots of stuff going on this week, from an NFL-sized divorce. We got Roy Williams being a slacker, and Greg Jennings gets a new deal the old-fashioned way. To talk about that and more, we bring in Bob Harris, senior editor of FootballDiehards.com. Bob, how's it going?
It's going great. I hope I'm not getting too emotional. I don't want to go all Ocho Cinco on everybody here, so I'll try to...
It's been a rough week, man.
You know, hey... It has been tough, and I'm just glad some of us are taking it better than others.
Yeah. Ocho Cinco apparently is not taking it very well, and we'll get into that in a little while. But want to go ahead and start off with, of course, the Favre Watch 09. What's going on now? I hear he just went up to Minnesota, had his shoulder checked earlier in the week. Now, he's actually going to Minnesota for his doctor's appointments now, it looks like.
Yeah, you know, this is right where we expect it to be. You know, shoulder willing. Brett Favre is a Viking. I mean, there's a lot of reports still suggesting that that he has a contract already in place, agreed upon. Now, the latest reporting tonight is that, you know, the Vikings haven't filed a contract with the league office, meaning, you know, that nothing is official. But, you know, that doesn't mean that they didn't necessarily have to file it. They can have an agreement in place. Buzz Cook continues to do the best Sergeant Schultz I know nothing routine since the original Sergeant Schultz and Hogan's Heroes. I mean, he continues to deny all reports. The other reports are that, you know, the jerseys are already being manufactured and that John David Booty is in for a small mountain of cash, apparently, for number four is going to be on Brett Favre and not on him. So, you know, where we stand right now is, you know, the little tidbits that make sense. The high school coach where Favre works out in Mississippi, like to throw to the kids there, says he looks like he's throwing as well as ever. Looks like the surgery worked. Looks like Favre will be a Viking. The only real question at this point seems to be when they announce it. Some people have speculated they might announce it this week, you know, and using a little right before the 4th of July, kind of to minimize the media circus. They may wait a little later. They may do it just a little before training camp to kind of blunt the onslaught of media for the opening of camp. But, you know, all that is moot. Brett Favre is a Viking on the opening day of training camp, as long as nothing goes south on that shoulder. So everything continues to head in the direction it is. He is a Viking. And if that's the case, you know, hey, let's get excited about it as fantasy owners and say, look, Bernard Berrien's value just went up a little bit. Look, Vincente Shanko's value just went up a little bit. Adrian Peterson could be a little more dangerous runner with a better threat of a downfield passing attack. There's no doubt about all these things. And if Favre is sound and healthy, he knows the offense better than he knew the Jets offense. And if you remember what he did early last year, he came in and he played very well until the shoulder became an issue. So, you know, this is not necessarily bad. Once the horrible story is over, the drug-out affair, the will he or won't he, the maybe I will, maybe, you know, that... You know, the story is over and the games begin. This is not a bad deal. I think the big frustration comes from, you know, at least from the perspective of covering it and trying to keep up with it, is all the indecision that leads up to it. And the subterfuge, you know, the, well, I don't want my release. I wouldn't ask the Jets for my release because that wouldn't be right. Oh, would you mind releasing me? You know, I mean, the whole soap opera drama that, you know, is the daily grind all offseason is the irritant. Once he's on the field and playing, hey, there's nothing irritating about it at all. From a fantasy perspective, it's a pretty good deal.
Absolutely. Another a player who may be in Minnesota next year that's making some news now is Marvin Harrison. Apparently the Vikings are interested in him. His agent, Tom Condon, says that he has no plans to retire. He's still hoping to play in 2009, and if they're able to ink him up, that's a whole other threat for him, isn't it?
You know, it could be. I'm not as sold on this one. I think Marvin Harrison, from what I've heard, you know, up to this point, is he hasn't drawn a lot of interest, primarily because he wants to make good money. Now, the report suggesting the Vikings might be interested also suggested they might be interested for a low-end contract. I don't think Marvin Harrison has any interest in a low-end contract. He still thinks he's a big-time guy, and I'm not sure it's worth it to him to go out there. You know, he's pretty much made his fortune. He's pretty well settled and probably in pretty good shape, so I'm not sure he's going to be wanting to come out and do anything for a low-end contract. I think he's going to hold out, you know, just keep himself available, much like Edgerrin James is right now, waiting for a situation to open. You know, when a team maybe gets into training camp, injuries start to become an issue for some team, then maybe some of these guys, you know, Harrison, maybe even Edgerrin James, become a little hotter commodities. I personally think Edgerrin James is going to be a more popular free agent commodity than Marvin Harrison. I mean, just the knee has been a problem. And you look at Edgerrin James, he finished the season with a bang for the Cardinals before they released him. I mean, he couldn't be in a better situation. He can kind of wait and pick and choose. And any injuries, these guys, you know, they come up a little higher on the radar. James starts out higher. Harrison, I just think a lot of teams are not going to be interested in paying him top dollar, you know, given the recent history and knee issues.
Kind of similar to Anquan Boldin, do you think Marvin Harrison just doesn't understand what leverage he does or does not have?
I don't think he cares. You know, I think he's just at the point where it really doesn't matter. If he doesn't play, I suspect he would be as happy not playing as playing. Sure, would he like to play? Yes, if the money is right. But if it's not right, I don't see him being in a huge hurry. You know, when you look at him, you know, you don't see that urgency to be on the field in him, that kind of that intense of a drive in that regard. I'm not trying to, you know, cut him, you know, sell him short. He's been a fantastic player, but he's just, you know, given his place in life right now and where he's at in terms of age and his career is, I just think if he, you know, if the money's right, he's interested. If the money's not right, I'm not sure he's going to be that excited about it.
Absolutely. Well, we don't want to beat a dead horse, so we'll keep you up to date in the news and view section on both Brett Favre and Marvin Harrison. But moving on now, looks like Roger Goodell is going to be busy over the next couple of days/weeks. He's now reviewing both Plaxico Burress' case as well as starting to take a look at the Vic case. Which one do you think is going to take precedence to him right now?
You know, I think he's going to start reviewing the Vic case. I think he's going to wait until the sentence is over, which is soon enough. But it sounds like he may be able to move on Burress a little more quickly because he's going to not wait around until the trial or until the legal situation resolves itself. In Vic's case, he wants to wait until the sentence is over. So I do think we could have resolution on Burress. What I think is interesting today is the report first came out. You know, Chris Mortensen first had it, and he suggested, you know, a 4-game suspension is coming. And shortly thereafter, Drew Rosenhaus jumped on his Twitter and immediately began saying, 5 teams interested in Plaxico Burress. So the issue is, in Burress's case certainly, and in Vic's case to a lesser degree, I think, you know, teams, the interest is there depending on what the outcome of this of the disciplinary action is. I think in Vic's case, you know, it's a little more vague. There's a little more open to question. And I've seen some suggestions today that maybe, you know, if he went into the upstart UFL, maybe spent a year working and regaining his chops, that might be really a good course of action for him, even if he's cleared to go back to the NFL. I'm not sure if that's going to work out for him. I'm not sure if the money is going to work out for him. I mean, Michael Vick needs to make some cash.
Yeah, he's pretty broke right now.
Yeah, you know, and hey, he's, you know, going through the bankruptcy and the whole thing, and a lot of his bankruptcy plans are dependent on him getting a big NFL contract. Maybe he sits around and he sees what kind of contract interest there is, and makes a decision based on that. Maybe in his longer term, he views it might be better to go and develop himself and show what he can do, knock some rust off, playing for maybe Jim Fassel or some, you know, respected coach in the UFL right now, and that might not be a bad route for him. I'm a little skeptical of that. I'm not sure Mike Vick is going to, you know, make that decision to step back. I think he's going to press forward. In Burress' case, we know what he thinks. He thinks he shouldn't go to jail. He thinks he shouldn't be suspended. He's pretty surprised that he's not already on a team. All these things tell you a lot about Burress. I think what was interesting on ESPN recently, seeing Tim Hasselbeck just drop the hammer on him. I mean, no equivocation. Just if you want the worst guy on your team, you want the worst teammate ever, a guy who's late for every meeting, a guy who doesn't work hard in practice, a guy who doesn't try hard in games unless you get him involved early, then sign Plaxico Burress. I mean, I'm not sure how much stronger commentary there is than a former teammate coming out on national TV in front of God and everybody and saying you're a big piece of poop. So, I mean, that's pretty hard to overcome given all your other issues. So, hey, if he's available, somebody will sign him. And, you know, he'll be Plaxico Burress. He will, you know, he'll be that lousy teammate, but he'll put up some big numbers. So, you know, it's something fantasy owners definitely want to watch. I think Roger Goodell will have a little ruling on him a little quicker, but we'll see both him and Vic a ruling on both of them, I think, in July.
Well, see, and Goodell's going to have a difficult time with this because he's also going to have to make a decision on the Dante Stallworth thing. And he's going to take criticism either way, if it's giving Stallworth too light or too strong of a sentence or a suspension. Same thing with Vic, where Vic actually went to jail for a period of time, served his sentence. So Roger Goodell's certainly going to have some difficult choices to make.
Can't you see that momentum, Skip, though, being that, you know, if there's going to be an error, it's going to be in Vic's favor and not in Stallworth's favor?
Exactly, and I mean, if you would have thought a couple of years ago when all this news broke that after what Michael Vick did that he would not receive a very tight suspension than Dante Stallworth coming in. Obviously, he's going to have to probably – maybe Roger Goodell is going to have to fit in there where our legal system failed us.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think, you know, if you look at the sentiment surrounding Vick right now, it's, hey, the guy committed a crime, you know, whether you didn't think it was that bad or you thought it was the worst thing in the world, he's done his time. He's done that sentence. Now, you know, the commissioner has to get past the fact that Michael Vick lied to his face. I mean, that to me is a big issue for Vick. And that's the one sticking point in my mind is to how easily it will be for Roger Goodell to get past the whole issue and whether, you know, Vick doesn't have to pay a little more in terms of watching from the sidelines. But we'll see. I do think that Dante Stallworth is going to get the hammer hard.
Well, that'll certainly be interesting. And yeah, as you said, that'll all be breaking here probably within the next couple of weeks. And be sure to check out the News and Views section for breaking up-to-the-minute news there. Turning our attention to Redskin land, looks like Portis and Zorn maybe having another spat. Any truth to that, or is this people dredging up?
You know, Clinton Portis says no, there is no truth to that. Here's what we know for sure: there has been some truth to that. You know, if you go back to the end of the season, Portis clearly wasn't happy with the way he was used, and if you look at his season, I mean, the first half of the year he came out gangbusters, put up huge totals. Second half of the year, whether it was overuse, whatever you want to call it, or game planning, or just, you know, less effective play from the team overall, he didn't do much, and there was some repercussions. There was some, you know, Portis had some pretty pointed criticism for Zorn after the season, and you know, and in turn Portis caught some pretty pointed criticism. I mean, John Riggins came out and ripped him, just said, you know, this is the guy, this is what you have. He makes so much money and he has worth so much against the cap that he knows there's nothing keeping him from saying whatever he wants and throwing whoever he wants under the bus. But you know, that all taken into account, I think everyone involved knows they have to, you know, something has to give this year. They have to get some success this year. So, you know, Portis has denied that there are any issues. He admits that maybe he had a better relationship with Joe Gibbs than he did with Zorn, but that they are on the same page and they're getting an understanding. Jason Campbell came out, said the same thing, no clashes, hey. But, again, they, you know, everyone involved has a pretty good reason to keep this all as under the radar. You know, certainly everyone with the team, you know, to downplay this, say there's no issues. But you know what? The first sign of trouble, does anyone believe Clinton Portis is not going to speak his mind? And
well, absolutely not. I mean, we've seen so many cases, I mean, particularly of this offseason, of players and coaches, I mean, over the past year, not really getting along, and that those relationships deteriorating seem to have taken their toll.
Yeah, they seem, you know, players seem quick to, you know, I think one of the things you're seeing is a lot of the frustration of players being asked not to let anyone know, you know, players who are hurt maybe worse than the teams are letting on, imagine that. You know, there's gambling in this casino. They're getting a little frustrated because, you know, they're being, you know, in their mind, they're being thrown on the bus. Like, oh, look, he's not tough enough. Like Lawrence Maroney last year, you know, had the broken shoulder. Well, he couldn't play, but the Patriots never, you know, of course the Patriots never said what the real problem was. And they just, you know, there was questions about his toughness that still linger. Well, he came out this year and said, yeah, it was a broken shoulder. Of course I couldn't play. And I think some of the frustration of players is the fact that teams want to control so much of the information and, you know, make sure that everything we hear in the media and we hear as fantasy owners and we hear as fans is filtered through.
Controlled by the machine.
Filtered as they want to see it. And that's something we're going to talk about with Chad Ochocinco. The filter is breaking down a little bit, and that's what you're seeing some of these players really come out and make their feelings known and not really have any problems with it. It's not, you know, it's not 10 years ago. It's not 20 years ago when that just wasn't done. And, you know, I think it's funny, though, that some of the more successful teams are the teams that best manage that and best keep the players in check in that regard. It takes a strong locker room anymore. But I think in Portis' case, we all know that, you know, he's liable to go off the reservation at times. I think we will see Liddell Betts, you know, play a little more this year, maybe try to keep Portis a little fresher. You know, I think Betts maybe was on the way to doing that early last year, but he got hurt. So I think we'll see Betts get more carries, and maybe Clinton Portis, if he's a little more effective and not beat up as much and not getting that heavy usage, you know, that they can spell him a little bit. I think if he stays productive throughout the year, he'll be a happy camper, and we won't have these outbursts. But, you know, if things aren't going his way, yeah, we're going to hear it.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing like winning to go ahead and turn an attitude around.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's the key you see in all these things. Again, you look at the situation, we bring up the Patriots where, you know, they have the tightest filter, the tightest leash on players. And why does that work? Well, because they're the most successful team. It's a heck of a lot easier to keep everyone pointed in the same direction, to herd those cats when there's a big pile of tuna at the end, you know, in the form of a Super Bowl trophy. So that, you know, that's always going to be the key in any of these cases. Guys that are guys on winning programs have a lot easier time staying on board. Look at the New York Giants, Skip, where, you know, Tom Coughlin was the worst guy in the world until they started winning. And now Tom Coughlin's not so bad. Did he change? Maybe a little bit. But overall, do you think his overall philosophy of how he deals with players and how the team reacts with or interacts with the media has really changed? No.
We can certainly spin this into the Ocho Cinco conversation now, but do you really think it's a good thing that a team is able to kind of, I don't want to say censor their players, but censor their players?
Well, from our perspective, from, you know, as in the media and especially as a fantasy owner, no, it's horrible. It's the worst thing in the world. We hate it. And I hate it, and you see it, but I mean, by the same token, do I understand why they're doing it? Do I understand how it benefits the team? Certainly. But, you know, that's where the two worlds collide. I mean, well, you know, as media and as fantasy players, our desire is to get every last bit of information we can, and we will go to great lengths to do that. And the team, you know, it's that little adversarial role. You know, the teams are going to do everything they can to win games. And in the Patriots' mind, and teams like the Giants' minds, and some of the more successful teams, you see that tight control over the flow of information. They see that as part of their success. So they're going to hold on to that as hard as they can, and we're going to try and rip it out of their hands as hard as they can. But, again, spinning into the, you know, into the future story here, I mean, that's going to be harder for teams to do.
Okay, we've kind of mentioned the Ocho Cinco thing. If you haven't heard, last night on his Twitter, he responded to some of the deaths we've had yesterday, obviously Farrah Fawcett and Michael Jackson passing away yesterday. And last night, Chad posted on his Twitter, he tweeted, "Okay, first Mrs. Fawcett, now Mr. Jackson. Please tell me that this is a mistaken rumor. If not, this is just as sad as 9/11. So a lot of people were responding to that, not very happy. He later later in the evening posted, "The 9/11 thing was a bit over the top. I'm just in an emotional state right now. Bear with me while I regroup, people. Be back in 10 minutes.
You know, I too was in an emotional state. Farrah hung over my ceiling right above my bed for many years. So, hey, you know, this is what the teams are going to have to deal with. The whole Twitter thing, the whole interaction with the fans and with the public. And it's something players are going to have to learn how to deal with, too. I mean, you know, as much as they want to get their side of the story out, is it always in their best interest to be out there as their own PR man, their own front man? Some of them might not be capable, Mr. Ocho Cinco. You know, I mean, I think as you get older, and part of it is youth, you know, as you get older, you learn that not every thought needs to be spoken. There are some things you don't have to share. And, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, depending on how you look at it, In society today, with all this, you know, the social networking and everything going on with Twitter, with Facebook, all these things, I mean, that's what you do. You get out there and you get in front of people and you tell them what you think, and it's unvarnished and it's unfiltered, and boy, it makes for a very compelling reading sometimes. At the same time, it's some of it's pretty cringeworthy, as we saw from Chad Ocho Cinco. You know, another thing he did, I think it was yesterday, the day before, was, you know, him and Sean Merriman got into a little twit fight and ended up going to the video and calling each other out. And, I mean, you know, hey, from that angle of it, it's great. But do you, Skip, see any chance that we're going to see Tom Brady calling out Chad Pennington or Peyton Manning or anybody on his Twitter page? I just don't, you know, I think that's where the teams, I mean, they're going to want to maintain that control. But it is going to get increasingly more difficult for them to control the information. We've seen a little bit of in recent years, players trying to take a little more control of the flow of information with their own official sites. You know, we saw Steven Jackson come out and say some things last year. We've seen Terrell Owens endlessly. I mean, it was like Twitter was invented for T.O. He loved him.
Even on LaDainian Tomlinson's website. I mean, we primarily found out information on their contract agreement from LaDainian Tomlinson's website.
Exactly. So I just think, you know, this is something the teams are going to be, you know, it's something they're going to have to deal with, and it's something that, you know, we as the media and as fantasy owners need to understand, you know, hey, just because Steven Jackson, you know, tells me he feels good and that leg is great and he's ready to start, well, you know, that's one of the five lies you need to listen to in order to gauge the truth. You know, you need to hear the coach's lie, you need to hear the trainer's lie, you need to hear the agent's lie, you need to hear the player's lie. Then your job as a fantasy owner is to pull out that thread of truth, it's in there, And you can find it amongst the five lies or six lies or however many it is. But everyone has something they're selling you. You know, nobody is going to tell you the outright truth. They're going to tell you their truth. And the better you get as a fantasy owner sitting there, or, you know, just being in the media, the better you can sit there and the more lies you have to compare, the easier it is to find that thread of truth. That's the bottom line. And so the more these guys are out there, you know, you got Drew Rosenhaus out there tweeting, you got his players out there tweeting, you got some coaches, some teams out there tweeting, you got the NFL out there tweeting. You go out there and you round up all those threads, and there is a little pile of truth somewhere in all that crap, and you just fish it on out, and you'll be a little bit of ahead of the other guy. And it's, you know, in the end, the more information, the better. I mean, that's the goal of the fantasy people. You know, I mean, I think that's why I got in this business. In 1993, you know, you sit around and the injury report would come out on Wednesday in USA Today, and that's the last thing you heard until kickoff, and you're going, why isn't Michael Jackson playing today? Not that Michael Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens Michael Jackson, or the Cleveland Brown Michael Jackson. Why isn't he playing? You didn't hear anything until game day. And that's why we all got into this, started getting into this whole information thing, was, dang it, we needed to know what happened between Wednesday and Sunday morning. And the more we can find out, the better job we can do giving owners a chance to get a little bit of an edge on their competition. And you know what? That's how you get that point here, that point there, that makes you a champion and makes the other guy really irritated at you.
Well, this also kind of gives us an inside look into some of these players' lives and, I mean, how they think, what goes on in their minds, obviously, if they're posting from their home and without any filters. I mean, do you think that this might be the downfall of some players over the coming years? I mean, if they continually misspeak and say things like comparing certain people's deaths to 9/11. I mean, there's going to be some people who have crossed Ocho Cinco off their list of people who they like because of this. Is this going to be the downfall of a lot of players down the line, you think?
I don't know if it's going to be the downfall of a lot of players, but just, you know, let's go back to Jimmy the Greek, who made a comment on the television, a racial slur that ended up costing him his job. Over time, you know, that happens to a lot of different people, and you have to realize when, you know, the NFL is, you know, the media magnet of the world right now. I mean, they have their own network. They have actually two networks, if you count ESPN and ESPN 7, 8, 9, and 10. And, you know, they are a 365-day-a-year, 24-hour-a-day reality show. That's what they wanted to be. But with that starts coming, you know, I mean, now you have TMZ cameras following players as well as the sports cameras. And so this glare is going to be much greater on everybody involved in the NFL. And you're going to see things like if a comment comes up on Twitter or if some pictures show up on Facebook or, you know, I mean, these are the kind of things that are going to cause people trouble. You look at Vince Young, I mean, you know, the partying pictures that he had up, you know, the shirtless, sweaty club scene of him holding up the tequila bottle. Well, same with Jamarcus Russell. These things play, you know, it doesn't take too many pictures to create a perception. And, you know, whenever I talk to players, I always ask them, do you get a fair shake of the media? Or do you think they just roll with the, you know, do you think they kind of play up the bad parts? And in the end, I think the players understand it doesn't matter. Whatever the perception is becomes the truth. And they see these things like Twitter and, you know, their own websites as ways to combat that. But it's a two-edged sword, and if they're not careful, they're going to get cut, and they're going to get cut bad. Chad Ochocinco is the candidate I'm watching the most closely.
I'm going to go and put T.O. up in there, too.
T.O.'s, hey, nobody cares, though. I mean, if T.O., the crazier T.O. says, the crazier T.O. gets, the more, you know, it doesn't seem to hurt him at all. I mean,
well,
how much crazier can it get?
Yeah, and T.O.'s craziness is typically funny as opposed to concerning.
Yeah, you know, again, I have this theory that Chad Ochocinco is 6 years old, so, you know, nothing he says surprises me.
That's possible. Well, let's go ahead and move on to Greg Jennings. Looks like the Packers have confirmed him signing a long-term deal, making him another top 10 fantasy prospect for this year, or receiver at least.
Oh, certainly. You know, he's put up the numbers and he's done it. But I think what's interesting about this story, I mean, he's getting, nearly $27 million in new money. It's worth about $9 million a year. Now, let's see, who wants that kind of money right now? Anquan Boldin would like that. There's a number of guys who would like that kind of money, but what's the difference? What did we hear about Jennings until the day he got his money? Did we hear him out there screaming he wanted his money, he needed his money, if he didn't get his money, he was going to get traded, that he was the most productive receiver in Green Bay, much more productive than Donald Driver, who makes, until this contract, 10 times more than he did annually? We heard nothing. And it just makes you wonder, maybe, if some of the receivers couldn't take a little lesson from this situation. You know, Green Bay is not the most generous team in the world. Let's face it. They don't run right up to the cap, and they tend not to pass out. I think Aaron Rodgers and Jennings are on the offensive side are the guys that they've recently really taken care of. But, you know, they do things in a very low-key way, and Jennings picked up on that, and look, it served them well. So you wonder if some of these guys who aren't being more, a little more outspoken, the Brandon Marshalls, the Anquan Boldens, guys like that, I'm not saying they're not deserving to get money, but there's a way to handle things and there's a way not to handle things, and perhaps Greg Jennings has shown them that there's another way to handle things. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be wonderful. Do you think other football stars may take a look at this situation and say, hey, maybe if I just keep my mouth
shut? You know,
shut,
I think maybe other positions, but not wide receivers. Come on.
Yeah, take a look at the list of wide receivers out there who are holding out right now. Good call.
Know, that's
probably not going to happen.
Yeah, that's the, you know, the diva position. Very undiva-like behavior from Greg Jennings. He may get his union card yanked or something from the wideout crew. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Also, too, happening this week, Roy Williams' workout habits has been questioned. People saying that maybe he doesn't lift enough or hasn't lifted enough in the past. Do his numbers stand for himself, though?
You know, I think he did lift a lot in college, but, you know, there I think it says more about the Detroit Lions that, you know, his lifting program didn't continue through the season. Maybe it makes you wonder kind of, you know, about the overall discipline and things there. I know Rod Marinelli was considered a disciplinarian, but when you hear that, you know, that one of the top players just decided at some point, you know, well, I don't really need to work on the muscle mass or do anything like that during the season. I'm good in off season. Hey, there's something to be said for that. I do think that if you look at Roy Williams, I mean, obviously he's a physical specimen. He's, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 220. I mean, he's got plenty of strength. He should spend most of his time, I think, working on catching the football either way. And it sounds like he's doing a little of that. He's doing a little buttering up of Tony Romo. They asked him, you know, what he needs to do to keep, you know, keep the balls coming his way. And he said, just catch the ball when he throws it to me any way I can. And he also said that he may be telling his girlfriend looks good. And, you know, given some of the things we've been hearing recently, maybe that would help.
Yeah, his comments were kind of interesting. He said, they're just trying to find something to make negative out of me once again. He started lifting weights in seventh grade, according to his report. And apparently the year that he stopped making it, he'd had a couple of nicks and strains and pulls in his first couple of years, thought that he may take a little time off lifting. And the year that he didn't lift, he went to the Pro Bowl. So
yeah, you know, hey, we all can justify our actions pretty easily. I would suggest that when, you know, you have a team that, you know, you have a lifting program that probably everyone should take part in it. But again, that's my old school philosophy, and the results do kind of speak for themselves. He did make the Pro Bowl.
Absolutely. Also, a kind of a sad day in NFL, too. There's a divorce going on in the NFL. Chris Johnson, Lindell Wyatt, smash and crash. No more. Why is that?
Well, Johnson says it's time to go out on his own. He's come up with a new nickname for himself. He wants to be known as Every Coach's Dream. And he said smash, and his quote was, smash and dash have had a divorce. That's official. Well, Lindell Wyatt was, you know, kind of took it all in stride and said, well, I don't think so, you know, and obviously Lindell has, you know, there's T-shirt money to be made off the smash and dash, there's media attention, so it's understandable why you'd like to have that. But Johnson, he's adamant, I want to be my own guy. He said, every coach's dream, that's me, and he kind of played it off like it's like when, you know, your little brother gets beat up his whole life and you grow up and you're bigger than him and you still can't beat him up anymore. He thinks that's where Lindale still is. He thinks he's outgrown Lindale and that Lindale ought to move on. I do like head coach Jeff Fisher, a little bit skeptical about the whole situation. Certainly is the every coach's dream nickname, looking back at the bongo playing and such like. But I do like Fisher's suggestion was Dumb and Dumber. I thought that was...
Do you think Chris is going to be more productive now that he has sliced that? I mean, is he just wanting more media attention with his name being up there by himself? I mean, what's really behind this?
I'd like to think the whole thing's a big joke. And, you know, looking at him in the locker room, it's been pretty amusing. And I do think that maybe it's just a couple guys having fun with each other. Again, if there's money to be made off some kind of marketing or if there's media to be garnered by changing or not changing nicknames, I would put none of this past any of them. And I suspect that any indignation that Lindell Wyatt professes is well overshadowed by the fact there's a bunch of cameras in his face asking him what he thinks about it because he likes to talk as much as Chris Johnson.
Well, as you said, the NFL is a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week soap opera these days. So the soap opera
that's the
continues.
Goal.
Anything else you got to touch on, Bob?
You know, we're sitting here, we're doing in the magazine frenzy. We finished the Pro Forecast. You ought to go to the order page and order them up. They'll actually be delivering soon. Should be on newsstands in about a week or so. We're working on the fantasy football cheat sheets right now. Then we'll finish up with the draft book and the Football Diehards magazine. Everything going smooth. We're really looking forward to get him out there. Also have a fantasy notebook coming out on Sunday. And I think the big feature item will be a little comparison, a little compare and contrast with Pierre Thomas and Reggie Bush and what the Saints' plans might be in the backfield this year. So lots going on, plenty to do. Check out Fantasy Nation, a little ongoing talk. Check out the message boards for a little more in-depth conversation. Plenty of fun on Football Diehards.
Absolutely. Well, be sure to check out the News and Views section, too, for all the up-to-the-minute breaking news. And until next time, this has been the FootballDiehards.com podcast.